What is up, you beautiful human? Hello and welcome back to the Raw, Real and Vulnerable podcast with me, your host, Bec Antonucci. I am back in Bali after a midweek dash over to Sydney. I had just the best 3 nights. I really spoiled myself. I love staying in the harbour, Circular Quay. I'm obsessed with Sydney. I love the Opera House and I love the bridge. I love the water there. I just love the view. I always have. And something about it feels so alive to me. Sydney, for me personally, is the most alive city in Australia. And when I knew that I was going, I said to myself, I really want to treat myself like the woman that I am. I desire to treat myself the way that I really deserve to be treated. So I booked myself a beautiful hotel room. I made sure I had a bath. I made sure I had a view. It was in the exact location that I desired. And I really gave back to me. And I spent Friday doing in-person podcast recordings. Like, I am obsessed with in-person podcast recordings. Now I'm like, all the amazing people need to be with me here in person. I cannot wait to share with you the absolute fire in-person podcast that I recorded with some incredible humans. I want to keep it a surprise, but I'm really bad with surprises. So I kind of want to tell you, but I don't want to tell you. So I'm going to try and keep it a surprise. You are going to wet your pants, or I'm going to wet my pants, and you guys are just going to be excited when these episodes launch. Oh my fucking God. And I recorded an in-person podcast with Ellie from Comfortable In My Skin for her incredible podcast. I just can't wait to continue to get this stigma annihilating message out. I'm not like, oh, let's reduce the stigma. I'm like, let's just fucking annihilate it so it doesn't even exist. And we're all free to be our liberated, fully expressed selves in this world. But today's episode, my loves, is an incredible guest episode with a man named Courtney Brame. And we deeply dive into the conversation around herpes from a man's perspective. A lot of men actually engage with me all the time and say to me, I know that you speak to women on the internet, but I resonate with so much of what you say. And are there more men speaking up for us? So Courtney is a brilliant advocate in the herpes space. He is such an incredible communicator. He is so funny. I literally love his face. His face is just so expressive. And you know that self-expression is something that really lights me up on the inside. And we just dive into so many different parts of the herpes conversation. We speak about disclosing and its direct link to increased sexual compatibility. We speak about the direct correlation between a herpes diagnosis and suicide ideation. We speak about how our identity is attached to our sexuality. Courtney brought up with me the conversation around a herpes diagnosis and navigating deep regret. And this is a conversation that a lot of new clients bring to me. I regret the ex-partner. I regret that man. I regret the swipe on that device. I regret this short skirt that I wore. I regret that extra drink that I had at the bar. And we speak about how you can personally navigate healing from this deep felt sense of regret. And finally, something that I've never brought to the podcast before, which is an incredible conversational piece that Courtney brought, which is why you want to stay listening all the way through to the very end. Courtney speaks about how identity validation can support you in healing through your herpes journey. If you love this episode, please screenshot it, share it to your story, tag both myself and Courtney, because we would abso-fucking-lutely love to connect with you. Strap yourself in. Even if you do not resonate with the herpes conversation, this is one hell of an episode. Let's fucking go. I am sitting here with an incredibly beautiful man with the best laugh I have ever heard. There were so many technical difficulties to get on this call. It's taken us 22 minutes, but the humor of what I got to receive in the process of us making this happen is absolutely so worth it. Courtney Brame, welcome to Raw, Real and Vulnerable.
Thank you for having me. That was hilarious because you sounded like a slowed down anonymous person with the Darth Vader voice. It was like, Courtney, are you there? And I just lost it. I couldn't hold it together.
He's like, are you hearing what I'm hearing? I'm like, no. And he's giggling like a five-year-old child. I'm like, what is he hearing? I need to know. And then he does this impersonation so well, by the way, that I'm like, he was so charismatic. I love it.
God, thank you. Thank you. And thanks for having me. I always like the opportunity of being able to be on somebody else's podcast because all of the back end work is not my responsibility and I just get to talk. So
yeah. You're an amazing man with a beautiful face, incredible smile, and a lot to share. So I'm excited to dive in with you. But for anyone who doesn't know who you are like I do, who is Courtney Brame and what is it that you do in the world?
Yeah, so my name is Courtney Brame. I like anime, rap battles, yoga, hosting podcasts, generally hearing about people's life experiences. I am a 500-hour registered yoga teacher, which I realize I've not told people about that because I just integrated yoga into what I do. The reason I'm here is something positive for positive people. And this is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that offers more holistic support for people navigating herpes stigma. I do not deal with the physical symptoms and all that stuff. I tend to utilize yoga as a support resource to help people navigate the emotions of their diagnosis. And I do a little bit of research and surveys. I interview people living with herpes on a podcast and get their experiences and put that up on the Something Positive for Positive People podcast feed. And I also educate healthcare professionals, therapists, counselors, sex educators on what it means to have stigma minimizing language and communication when it comes to working with not just people with herpes, but the general public, just to make some type of dent in the stigmatized atmosphere that is herpes education.
Yes, I love that. So I guess my first question for you is, because I speak to predominantly females and I've had so many men reach out to me and say, can you interview more men? What is it like, Courtney, to be a man in this world who tests positive for the herpes virus? Prior to breaking through, what was it like then?
Yeah, so at that point in time, I just didn't know anybody. I didn't know anybody else who had it. You see the statistics. It's like, this is how many people have herpes, but that doesn't really mean anything to me because I don't know any of these people, right? So looking back at those first 4 years, it was 2013 I was diagnosed. I kind of just stayed in relationships that were safe, comfortable, that the partner knew that I had had herpes already, and it just wasn't an issue with disclosing or moving forward. And then when the relationships stopped working and I had to start dating again, it was like, oh, this is a little bit more challenging than it was to just stay in the relationship. So being a man with herpes, two things happened. One, I recognized that a lot of the conversations that I was having with women, like having to disclose, there was more gratitude to me for saying that because I don't know if that's not a common conversation or if these women just weren't engaging with men who talked about sexual health. Because even the conversation about sexual health and me saying, yeah, I have herpes, do you want to move forward? That initiated conversations about also sexual compatibility. Like, what do you like? And women's heads explode when you ask, like, all right, well, what do you like? Because they're like, no one's ever asked me that before. So I'm kind of getting a little bit ahead of myself. But to answer the question originally, what's it like being a man with herpes? I think it's lonely because I don't see or didn't at that point in time see any other men who were openly talking about herpes. And like now there's Rich and there's Pickering Fitness. And I've met some people who are underground open about having herpes as well. But they wouldn't be like as visible as the three of us are. And there's someone else, I don't want to say his name because he removed his presence from online, but he was in Australia as well. And he mentioned going back into the workforce and wanting to erase everything that he had online. Mm-hmm. So there were these three other men, as far as I knew, who were open about having herpes. And I didn't find them until I became open myself.
Yeah. And what was the transition for you going from those 4 years of dating women that maybe weren't in alignment, realizing as you were stepping back out that you got to really face off with everything that you were navigating and the loneliness? what was the transition from loneliness to actually, I'm going to be open about this and I'm going to take up space in the online space and offline? It sounds like you're very active offline as well to support people with this.
Yeah. So I would say that it started after I had a Tinder disclosure go a little bit poorly, or we were messaging and she said something about having chronic asthma. And I was like, this is a really good time to disclose. I was like, oh, you know, we all have our health conditions. It was like when I found out I had herpes. And that was the end of the conversation. There was no response to it or anything. And we had been texting for a few days at least, but I think this was before the ghosting terminology was a thing. So that's essentially what happened. And then going into the dating world, I'm not going to say the name of it, but there's a dating site for people with herpes. And being on there, I started to see that there were a lot of people who were talking about wanting to end their lives because of their diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't have any issues on the dating site. I thought that being there meant that the only problems that you had were now alleviated, which revolved around having to tell somebody you had herpes. So if everybody here has herpes, what's the issue, right? Mm-hmm. And there were so many more issues. And I saw enough times that there were people talking about wanting to end their lives. And I just was like, all right, man, what's happening here? So I started to just interview people who were living with herpes about their experiences. And one interview turned into another and then another. And it's so easy for people to share their experience openly, like without any fear of judgment, when you have the anonymity of just using your first name or just not even being on video. So I was able to offer that to people. And then what I learned over time was that regardless of how different we all were, we had this one thing in common. But I learned that there are so many individuals living with herpes that that in itself is, in fact, a community. So my loneliness brought in more lonely people, or isolated, let me not say lonely, but isolated, seemingly alone in navigating their diagnosis, that I talked to so many people. It was like, there is no way I can ever go back to feeling like I'm alone in this, because there are so many people who are feeling alone in this, that that in itself is a community. It's just a matter of being a place or a space where people can connect there. And so while I sit at the pinnacle of what is now Something Positive for Positive People, where individuals have access to me, and I would like to see that become a community, but I don't think we're there yet stigma-wise. Like, I'll extend invitations for people to come to social things, social events, live podcast recordings, yoga classes. And I think that stigma really keeps people from wanting to show up to these kinds of things, even virtually. And sometimes time doesn't work, but there are, for perspective, I would say that my yearly reach is roughly 46,000 people, looking at the statistics of the website. And out of the 46,000 people, I've put on support groups and I've had one person show up, or no people show up, or I'll have like, hey, we're going to do this thing. And I have to like drag people to stuff. And oftentimes when I do, if it's a successful event, it's women. Like, men don't show up to these things that I put on. I've been to other people's events, and there have been a few other guys there, or even out in the wild at like dating functions or regular functions, I'll see that there are guys there. But when it comes to the herpes support, I find that I'm connecting and connected to a lot of other individuals, again, that take away that feeling of being alone. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does, beautifully. Number one, I want to just put in the space, there's a statistic, and I'm going to butcher it, by a PhD person that was studying the statistics directly correlated between the Google search engine of searching suicide and what is searched after that. And the second most searched thing in the Google search engine after suicide is herpes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I wrote a really great piece on it years ago. Because I experienced suicide ideation. I was not going to take my life, but there was definitely 60 days where I just thought I would rather die than live with this experience. And women reflect that back to me all the time of, I can't imagine living like this. Like, I won't take my life, but I want to. And I've always said, if I had of, no one would have known except for my doctor. It would have just been this beautiful young woman who decided to end her life. No one would have actually known why. And I believe that there is a huge statistic of suicides attached to herpes that we'll just never know about.
Yeah. So I've got a statistic. If you go to spfpp.org/data, there was a survey that I did in 2021, and there were 3% of people who expressed attempting suicide because of their herpes diagnosis. And 48% of people had suicide ideation after their diagnosis. But going into 2024, I was looking at our most recent survey that we conducted. This is going to be interesting to dissect, so people can take of this what they want. About 50% of people had a mental health diagnosis, and 50% after their diagnosis expressed suicide ideation. So there might even be a bit of a correlation between a person's mental health where it is, and then getting herpes, and then having a mental health response to their herpes diagnosis. So that's something that I'm really looking forward to unpacking at our upcoming conference.
I love that. And we can talk a little bit more about the conference in a minute. But what I believe the herpes shock surprise diagnosis is acute trauma. So acute trauma is something like a car accident. It happens hard, fast, and immediately. We weren't sat down by our sexual partner and disclosed to. So our freedom of choice has been taken from us. Something is happening with our body that we just don't even know what the F is going on. And then we walk into a doctor's office thinking we've got a UTI or thrush or something, and we're going to get an antibiotic or an injection, and we're going to be clear in 2 weeks. And then your doctor sits you down and says you've got an incurable STI for life. That to me is acute smash bang. Oh my God, I just had a fucking car accident out of nowhere trauma because we weren't disclosed to.
Yeah. So a lot of our identity is really interconnected with our sexuality, to the point where we get this diagnosis and it is an acute trauma being this one event that comes in where it should just impact us sexually. It impacts us holistically in the sense of who we are. Like now my ability to relate, connect with other human beings, how I see myself, all of these things are now just shattered by the impact of our diagnosis. And now we've got to put these pieces back together again. I find that most people that I speak to are more so regretting the situation that happened for them to get herpes. Now, to this day, we don't know exactly how we can pinpoint who gave us herpes, how we got it, when we got it. But most of the people come in and they have an idea of the timeline. And it's often, I shouldn't have had sex with this person. I ignored red flags. I shouldn't have done this. And there's a lot of regret around not herpes, but the sex that they had. So there's an undercurrent there of doing a thing that is shameful, but also with the person that it was with. It's very rare that a person comes in and they're like, oh yeah, so-and-so disclosed to me and I've decided to move forward and here we are. Because typically, you know, if those relationships do or don't work out, it doesn't send people down the spiral of, oh my God, I have to date again. This is going to be terrible. I don't know what I'm going to do. And those are the people that I talk to. I think that I talk to people who are often in the worst of it. And then there's people, of course, who are just getting back out into dating again, whether it be after a relationship where they knew they had it. And it's a little bit of an easier transition for them because they dealt with the early emotions. I do often talk to people who are freshly diagnosed and don't know where to start. And then there's the kind of person who is leaving a relationship and going back into the dating world, or they're opening up their relationship. I think that I probably evenly talk to the same caliber of person on both sides. So yes, is my answer to your question.
Yes. And I would really love to know, because I have clients who come to me for a myriad of things, but the ones that come for the herpes specific piece, they're actually navigating a lot of regret around their choices, a lot of regret around the partner that they chose, a lot of regret around some of my clients accepted their partner with their diagnosis and are now in breakups and going through deep pain and asking themselves, why did I say yes? How did I end up here? The women that weren't dating, weren't in relationships, why did I wear that short skirt? Why did I swipe that guy on Tinder? Why did I have that extra glass of champagne? I regret, I regret, I regret. How do we support men and women going through this deep felt sense of regret when it's attached to a diagnosis?
We can't do that. And people hate this answer that I'm about to give, but we're strangers on the internet. We don't know these people outside of what they tell us. So therefore, we're low risk in the sense of they can tell us vulnerably everything that they have going on with them. They might tell us stuff that they would never tell a dear friend, right? Mm-hmm. Identity validation. I look at suicide and I talk to some grief counselors and people in the mental health space. And I used to think that suicide was sadness, right? You're sad, so you want to kill yourself. And I learned that it was about a loss of control from these professionals and academia. And then the more I talk to people, what I find is that it's identity invalidation. So when your identity as who you are is consistently invalidated, that's when you go down that path. But identity validation by this logic is going to be the thing that gets you out of there. The only people who can validate your identity are the people who know you, people that you have friendships with, people that you might have been in relationships with, family, friends. The very people that are the last people we want to know about our diagnosis are actually the first people who need to know about our diagnosis so that they can still have the opportunity to treat us the same way that we were treated 10 seconds before we got our diagnosis. Because when we don't have that, it just validates this thing that doesn't have near as much relevance as who we are as a whole human versus who we are when we look at our sexuality. And this comes back to the identity thing, right? So I'm low risk in the sense of if somebody tells me this awful thing that happened to them and all of the details that they wouldn't share with somebody else, if I don't talk to them, that's low risk. But if they tell their friend and they stop talking to them, they feel like their world's going to crumble apart on top of this diagnosis. Yeah. But also, if that's your friend, that's not your friend. And that's a whole nother conversation, but I think that that's enough to really leave it there. So we support people by getting them to a place where they're accepting enough of their own diagnosis and they dissolve their own internalized stigma to where they can tell the people who need to know or the people around them and have their identity validated in being who they were 5-10 seconds before they got the news or had any inkling that maybe they have herpes.
Oh, I love that so much. And it really reflects a lot about my journey. I call it an edging process, but I started with female friends. A very non-sexy edging process. And in their deep acceptance, and what I found in my vulnerable expression is they would share something really vulnerable back because it created so much trust that I learned, oh my God, I'm safe. And then I was like, hold on, I want to attract a male partner. I'm going to move on to male friendship. Once that happened, again, what I'm hearing is my identity got validated in that moment. And again, I got this felt sense of I'm safe because if I tell you on the internet, of course, you're going to validate me. We're two people swimming in the same sea. We're in the same boat. And in that continual practice of telling people that I knew, that's where I built the confidence to be able to start telling people I don't know. But for any person listening right now who just feels like it is absolutely so terrifying, like the fear of loss, if you're my best friend, Courtney, and I'm about to tell you this thing and you could totally reject me, totally abandon me, my biggest core wound screaming to the surface, how would you support me to build the courage, the confidence to be able to disclose to someone that is so important to my life?
Yeah, first let you just decompress. I think that there's a lot of buildup over time of things that have been unsaid between the time of your diagnosis and the time that you got to me, whatever that process has been. So sometimes it's just a matter of letting a person say what they need to say. And in what they're saying, there's also things that are not being said. So when I listen, I have to hear both of those. I have to hear what you're saying, and I also have to hear what you're not saying, and also hear the emotion in your voice and address those things. Because in that isolation that I spoke about earlier, if we don't feel like we can say anything to people, when we finally do get the opportunity to, we might say things that we ain't even know were there. So my responsibility in holding this intentional, not safe space, I don't like safe space because I have a rant about that, but I call it an intentional space. Yeah. The intentionality of this space is for you to be able to say things that might not feel safe for you. And might not feel safe if they're heard by the wrong person, right? So let it out. If you need to say some very rude things about a person that you would never want the internet to know that you said, let that stuff out. Because even that's information. And for me to be able to do my best to validate you as a human and based on what you've shared with me, validate the experience, validate your identity as best I can, I'm going to need you to be real with me and say what you're feeling. And then from there, it's just more of an expression of gratitude and curiosity. I think that those are the two things that people need from support systems. And I offer that in my support to people. It's, hey, thank you for feeling safe to tell me this stuff. Like, how did it feel sharing that? Or what part felt hard for you? What was easy for you to share? Why do you think you can't tell the people around you about this? What makes me so much different than someone closer to you who can actually be physically supportive to you, whereas I'm on the other side of the world, country, nation, you know what I mean?
Why, Courtney, do you feel that most people have this future fantasy of everyone rejecting them, judging them, scrutinizing them, criticizing them? I'm actually working with quite a few men right now, gorgeous men. I'm like, I wish, have complete confidentiality in my work, but I'm like, I wish the women could watch your videos because they're gorgeous. They're successful. They want to love a woman. They want to deeply care, provide. And they're like, I'm a leper now. No woman will ever touch me. I'm forever ruined. Why do we feel this expression of us if we were to truly communicate, hey, my name is Beck Antonucci. It's just important that you know I carry the herpes virus now. Why do we think everyone is just going to absolutely think we are disgusting?
Because we think that about other people, or we had those thoughts prior to our diagnosis. And that's just not been worked on, right? Mm-hmm. So herpes has a personality, a name. Like we sort of humanize the virus, I want to say. Like we give the virus a personality, a face, a name, and now it's this ugly thing, right? And when we get it, that's what we become, essentially. If we haven't dealt with those feelings, if we haven't dealt with those emotions, and if we haven't challenged it, like I always tell people, challenge your beliefs with your behavior. I can sit here all day and think to myself, I can never reach forward and poke my screen. I would never do that. I'm never going to do that. How could I ever do that? If I do it, the worst stuff's going to happen. I can think that and believe that and feel that in my body, but nothing's stopping me from putting my arm in the air, making a finger and bringing it up to the screen. And oh my God, look what happened. Nothing. I just made the screen full. Like, I encourage people to challenge their beliefs with their behaviors. So people who say, I always get rejected, no women want me, and then you go out and you're being hit on all the time. It's not that women don't want you, it's that you're in the way of these women being able to even potentially reject you. And what I found too is like, I have to disclose to people very early, sometimes when I don't even want to. And it's because of the work that I do. So like people ask, what do you do for work? I'm like, ah, here's this thing. And they go, oh my God, I have herpes. And it's like, I've heard that way more times than I have ever told somebody that I was sexually curious about or interested in and have been told no. Like, yes, rejection is a little bit of a part of this, but it's not the only part of this. And when we close ourselves off from rejection, we're not even really closing ourselves from rejection because we're rejecting ourselves. So there's this self-rejection that's occurring before we even get to a place of experiencing what can be acceptance or what could be rejection.
No, I love that so much. And I have had the exact same experience where because of the work that I do, I just typically talk about herpes with any man that I meet from the get-go. I was on a date recently, gorgeous guy, we're hanging out. He was like, so what's one of the most like monumental things that's ever happened to you in your life? I was like, oh, at 25, I contracted the herpes virus. The person I sat with promised me he was STI free. And that just like totally rocked my world. And his eyes just went huge. And I was like, whoa, I always have like great disclosures. And I was like, he's going to be one of those ones that's like, what's the stats? What's the risk? What's this? And I'm not into that. I'm just like, hey, if you're not into it, you're not into it. And then he was like, you didn't have to tell me that. That's so brave of you. I was like, oh no, it's not brave for me anymore. Like it used to be, but it's not. He's like, no, I have it as well. Both. My ex-girlfriend, she got them on her lips. She gave me a blowjob. And he's like, I've never heard anyone talk about this. I was like, was he going to tell me? I always sit in this like, if I didn't just tell him that, were you going to tell me? But I find that a really frequent thing.
And I, you know, I wonder that too sometimes. I'm like, yeah, were you going to tell me? And it's not as rare as people think it is, right? The reality is that you've got a 1/3 chance, 2/3 of not experiencing rejection. Either the person has it or they don't have it and they're okay with it or they're not okay with it. So you've got a 66.6% chance of moving forward regardless. And people are so locked into that 1/3 of a response, which would be rejection.
What is up, you beautiful woman? I am interrupting this powerhouse podcast episode to let you know that next week I have launched something that I've never done before. The Confident Woman Bootcamp is a 4-day, highly interactive online coaching experience with me and my team designed to ignite a fire within you so that you feel confident to begin living your most alive, aligned, lit up, and turned on life. Babe, there is so much value packed into this 4 days. There is 2 content calls. There are 2 bonus live 90-minute coaching calls. Everything is recorded. You have 4 content pillars, a bonus embodiment module. And for everyone else in the world, you know, like the general pop, the investment is $249. I've literally made it a steal for everyone to join. But for my raw, real, and vulnerable community, I've made it even better. You can sign up for only $99. The code for you is in the link and in the show notes. So make sure that you head below, grab your seat, and I cannot wait to see you there. Mm-hmm. So I've got 2 questions to ask you. I'll start with 1. Women will say to me, this is so frustrating. It's almost like I'm disclosing to this person and waiting for a pass. Like if they say yes and like, yay, thanks, you will have sex with me. And if you say no, like what? And I always say, no, hold on. You're meant to be thinking about how you feel in this person's presence. If you want to proceed with them, if you'd love a next date. But they're like, it's so triggering, Beck. Like I'm all of a sudden handing all of my approval over to them. And yay, if they say yes, green card, I might get to have sex with this person. How absolutely condescending and just infuriating and awful is that? What do you have to say about that?
Disclosure as a word, we have to use it because that's what people understand. But I do believe we need to get away from that being it and more so opening it up for discussion. Mm-hmm. So when we stop looking at it like, oh my God, I have this thing to tell this person and this might be everything. The reality is if you do open up a discussion about sexual health with this person and you don't like how they're responding, you are the one making the choice now, mm-hmm. right? So if I come to you and I'm like, hey, you know, I really want to move forward with this. Let's talk about sexual health. Like I want to get down tonight, right? So I got tested 3 months ago, came back negative for all these things. I do oral swabs, anal swabs, like I'm into these things. And here's where I get tested. And the results came back negative, except for herpes, which I've had for the last 10 years. How about you? And I think a lot of times we miss that. How about you? And we also miss the details of a person's knowledge of what being tested consists of, where they're being tested, how frequently they're being tested. Because I talk to people who've not been tested in over a year and think that just because they've been in monogamous relationships that they're exempt from having to get tested or know their status, or they won't get or haven't been exposed to STIs. And, you know, not to make this sound bad, but like if you're willing to sleep with me and you ain't been tested in more than a year, like, who else you sleep with, right? So I think that it's important for us to look at this as a discussion and recognize that we are also evaluating if we still want to have sex with this person, not just being hopeful that this person wants to have sex with us. I'll stop it there. I have a lot more to say.
I really like that. But there's something that I really want to ask you around the stigma piece and any person that you said prior, it's because we used to judge it. I have so many men and women in my world that are like, Beck, how can I ever ask someone to accept me with this when a prior version of me was just a crystal clear no? I would have never, ever engaged with or been intimate with someone who disclosed herpes to me. How can I ask you to accept me when I know for certain I wouldn't have accepted someone with this?
So I look at it like a number of different things, right? One of my board members, Dr. Evelyn Dacher, she always says a heartbreak is probably worse than an STI.
I've been saying that because I've been going through a 12-month breakup. I'm like, breakups are way harder than herpes. This fucking sucks.
Seriously, right? So I'm stuck in not wanting to even put myself out there because in my mind it's like, well, I have herpes and I would have never accepted this. So I'm not even going to put myself out there to.
You never would have accepted it in another. If you were dating a woman and she told you, you would have been like, nah, bitch, see you later.
Right. Yeah, it's a self thing. It's really a self thing. Looking at what's most important to you. Like, why is it that this was so important to me? Why is it still so important to me? And looking at what's important to you now, and then being able to make that a priority more so than the herpes status. Because if that's the case, then that's what it has been. It's been that sex has been the most important thing, right? So if we look at sex and we go, well, what else is important to me in dating and relationships? And then we can have a side-by-side comparison of those things and restructure what our priorities are, and then go, okay, well, this is more important to me. I recognize at the time sex and sexual freedom was important, but now, like, sex is a part of what's important to me, but these things are so much more important that I'm going to look at whether or not this person is kind to me. Mm-hmm. What type of contributions are we making to each other's lives, mm-hmm. right? And when you're able to look at the bigger picture priorities and then be intentional about pursuing those things from there, I think it just makes whatever you thought about herpes beforehand completely irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that perspective. I always say you don't know what you don't know. And a prior version of me, if I was just going to have a one night stand with someone and that person sat down and disclosed herpes to me, yeah, I probably would have been like, no, thank you. But there have been three men in my life that have monumentally created such an impact in me and who I am as a woman that I can't say that I know for certain if they sat down and disclosed that I would have been a no, because I had deep connection with that person. And I feel ultimately we want to feel deeply connected to another. And I think, I believe that's infrequent. I'm not going to be deeply connected to you. If I see 10 men standing in front of me, the likelihood of me feeling deeply connected to the one of them for me personally is low. So when that person turns around and shares something really truthful about who they are, if deep connection exists, for me, that's not a red flag. It's not a red card. It's like a, hey, I experienced deep connection with you, so I'm so open to having this conversation with you. If I'm not deeply connected to you, then yeah, maybe it's like a no thanks. That's my opinion of it. I feel like we're not educated enough. None of us put our hands up to be herpes experts, herpes advocates, herpes anything. So we're learning hands on the job that we weren't informed then to actually be able to make informed choices and decisions.
No. We weren't. And it just goes back to what you said, like connection was important to you, right? So I like the connection that I'm having with this person more than I don't want herpes. So this is what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Love that. So I want to rapid fire some questions because I know we've only got 2 minutes left. What can we do to, I know you said stigma minimizing language. What is a top tip that you can share with us that will support us in actually minimizing our stigmatizing language?
Removing the violent communication when we talk about herpes and stigma, when we say things like, I want to prevent STDs, or are you using safe sex? Or when we talk about, are you practicing safe sex? Right. We can just call things what they are: barriers, condoms, dental dams. We don't have to say using protection. So minimizing the use of violent word choice when talking about sex and sexual health is one thing.
I love that. And you said sexual compatibility is what comes through for you with women when you start talking about the STI conversation. Do you feel that actually being willing to have a sexual health conversation increases sexual compatibility and intimacy?
Absolutely. Yes. And the short answer for that is, if you're comfortable talking about sex, then you're probably going to be comfortable having sex. And that awkwardness can be alleviated with just knowing that you're safer with somebody who knows how to communicate and pick up on not just the verbal aspect, but also body language, nonverbals, breathing. This is more than likely going to be someone that you'll have a good experience with.
And you mentioned sexual freedom. Do you believe that complete sexual freedom is still possible with the herpes virus?
Yes. I think that with some exploration and intentionality behind it, you are able to get more creative. Getting herpes means that maybe there's times where you can't have sex because of outbreaks, or the outbreaks are coming. So maybe certain things might be off the table, but how can you be intimate with other things? Are you want to play with candles, food, whips, some BDSM stuff, some role play? There's a number of things that can be done. And I think that being open to exploring those things can contribute to your own sexual freedom.
And for any man listening to this who feels really isolated and that there are only women speaking about it and women speaking to women about it, what one piece of advice and guidance would you offer to him?
man, life in general is a numbers game. And if you're hearing so many women speak about it, there's women that they're talking to about it, right? So if you're just kind of hanging out and lingering and not wanting to put yourself out there because you feel like, you know, if we're talking about heterosexual men, if you feel like there's no women out there, I challenge you to challenge that belief by going out there and just trying to put yourself in the situation to meet these women or meet women in general. And you'll be surprised at how many women are more accepting than you believe or who also have herpes than you would think.
Courtney, you're amazing. Can you tell us a little bit about your conference coming up and where we can all find you so we can connect with you more?
Yeah, so the conference is virtual. It's Thursday, May 23rd this year. I'm celebrating the 5-year anniversary of Something Positive for Positive People as a nonprofit. This conference is going to be open to all. We're going to be presenting our survey data from more than 1,200 people living with herpes. This will be something that can be used as a disclosure tool. It can be used in medical facilities. We're inviting healthcare professionals to learn about stigma from our lived experiences and from this survey. Therapists, counselors, sex educators, public health professionals, nurses, anyone who has patients or clients who might be dealing with an STI diagnosis, herpes specifically, this is herpes focused, and you can learn more about it and read all of the details of the registration at www.spfpp.org/conferences. If you go to the website, it's all over. So if you just go to spfpp.org, you'll see the information about the conference. Tickets are on sale right now at $55 US through the month of February. And in March, it goes up to $75 because early bird ends. So there's plenty of time to get tickets, tell people to come. It's virtual. Anybody can attend.
Amazing. We will put all of that information in the show notes so anyone who listens to this can jump on and receive all of your goodness. Courtney, it was so absolutely wonderful spending time with you today. If anyone just wants to find you other than your website, where do we go?
Instagram is probably going to be where I'm most active. It's just my first and last name, Courtney Brame _. So the _ is just after my last name. So it's Courtney Brame _. If you just search Courtney Brame, it's going to be a white lady who will have no idea what you're talking about.
She's just getting spammed herpes stuff, and she's like, leave me alone.
Yeah, I tagged her in something one day. She was like, hey, can you please remove me from that? It was an accident because my Venmo is my name, yeah. Courtney Brame. And so I was like, here's my Venmo. And it accidentally tagged her. She sent me a message. She was like, hey, can you please remove me from
I do not want to be associated with being public about herpes. Thanks. That's only for the select few of us. Courtney, seriously. I absolutely love what you're doing in the world. Thank you for such an insightful conversation, and I can't wait to share it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. If you're desiring more from me right now, firstly, I love your eagerness. And secondly, let's make it happen. Check out the link in my show notes where you can receive more information on my books, breakthroughs, online webinars, all upcoming courses and programs, and how you can get started on your journey within my world today. I can't wait to be back in your ears next week. And trust me, you won't want to miss this episode.